Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. Mike, we're not even going to like talk because you know what you're doing, so better than we do.
He's so good at it. At first, I'm like, wait a minute. I'm telling somebody who's actually done this for plenty of years.
Yes, way longer. So our guest tonight, Dr. Mike Dottola.
Mike Dottola.
The legend. How are you, sir?
So is Dottola D-I or D-E? I'm on Instagram trying to put you on here.
It's D-I.
D-I-T-O-L-L-A. Perfect.
What's your Instagram name?
Nice Italian name. Probably that. I would have to look. You know, I got to admit that that the people who I follow very few dentists on Instagram besides Payray.
And oh, yeah, yeah.
Hey.
I'm very high on Payray. I recorded Dude. I recorded something with Rich Maddow earlier today, and he called me and a few months ago when he asked me to speak at TBSE this year.
Oh, you're going
to
be there?
Yeah. Well, he said, who's the next Bill Dickerson of dentistry? You guys are probably too young to remember
Bill Dickerson. Now we know Bill Dickerson.
But basically, he was saying, who's the next really exciting person in clinical dentistry? And this was right around the time of Voices of Dentistry. And I said, you know what? I said, I've started following this guy on Instagram. He's a really cool guy. I said, I know a little about his story. I know he's a GP who like went out and got a little experience. And then he was like, you know what? I'm going to go out and learn how to do this stuff. And he went out and just took a shitload of courses. And now you just look at the cases he's doing and he's just crushing it. I think you should contact this guy. So I think Rich then called you afterwards. And,
yeah, so that's how it started.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Your name. And that's awesome, man. Thank you. It's so cool because you know what? I went to TBS in 2014 when I joined from the corporate, and they had about, I don't know, but there were thousands of people in that conference. I didn't know how this whole thing started, but I know Rich Maddow and his brother. What's his brother's name?
Dave.
Rich and Dave. They have been doing this. The TBS is called the best seminar ever. Yeah. We heard of that? Yeah. It's for the team and it's fun. Anyway, you're going to be there. So that's awesome.
That's pretty
fun. Anyways, let's talk about Mike Dottola though.
Well, and what's funny is, so and in full disclosure, I was, when we, which DS World did you MC? Was that 2017?
That was,
Orlando? I think that was 2017 Orlando.
Yeah, I did Sarek 30, and I guess that would have been, that was 2015, and then 2016 was Orlando, yeah.
So 2016 was the first one, that was the first time I came there, right. And I was like, that's really where one of the reasons I got into the speaking stuff and a lot of the stuff was hearing you and see, I was like, gosh, I kind of want to do that. That looks fun. That's where it all kind of started.
Well, when I saw you, and I'm going to put this aside, like I want to be very brief. I saw him on Glidewell and the videos and then the voices. But what was very, very interesting because he was such an engaged speaker on the stage that it's hard to miss him. It's very hard. I mean, you've been – let's go back and let him introduce himself. Jeez. From the spilling of his last name to like not letting saying okay, go ahead. Sorry,
take well, it. Well, okay. Well, I graduated when I graduated in 1988, way back then, and
after I was born.
Awesome.
And start practicing, and I was in private practice for like 10 or 11 years, and it was fine.
Where at?
Here in Southern California.
Oh, okay.
In the town where I grew up.
Did you go to USC or were you in...
I went to University of Pacific up in...
Pacific, nice.
Yeah. And so I'm from this little town called Downey, which has the first McDonald's, the first Taco Bell, and that's where the Carpenters, the singing couple who you guys are too young to remember.
I heard of them.
People are. And so start practicing there. And then one of my patients was one of the Crown & Bridge managers over at Glidewell Laboratories. And he started asking about, they had this new Crown & Bridge material at the time called CapTech, this 22 karat gold substructure that had feldspathic porcelain fused to the outside of it. And they had just built an operatory, and he wanted to know if I could come do some of these crowns on some patients so they could photograph them. And I said, sure, you know, I can do it on Fridays. I wasn't working Fridays. So I would go there on Fridays and do this, and they'd have a room full of technicians watching me, because most dental technicians have never seen dentistry done before. It's crazy that they build crowns and they never get to see their crowns go in the mouth. They've never seen the tooth prepped. They've never seen what it takes to get an impression. They just work on stone, be working on stone models all day, and never seeing a human is insane. So they'd come in and watch, and I'd be explaining what I was doing. And all of a sudden I found this new way of practicing that was kind of like lecturing, where instead of me just sitting there and working on some housewife from Newport Beach who was, you know, complaining because her teeth weren't a B-3 when she was done bleaching, I got to sit and work with these room full of technicians and talk to them, and we were filming it. And it was kind of this new way to do dentistry that I found exciting. And the more I did that, the more I was kind of bored with what I was doing just in private practice. And at the time, we would record it and send it out on DVD. This is back when AOL DVDs used to come in the mail too. So we'd send out, you know, 100,000 DVDs every quarter. And it was a big surprise for me, because when we started filming it and blowing up my dentistry onto a big screen, I realized just how bad it was. You know, I wasn't doing very good dentistry at the time. And so it forced me to figure out how to try to get better, because I wasn't born with a ton of talent when it comes to stuff like that. I have one God-given talent that I've been able to identify, and it's public speaking. It's certainly not dentistry or really anything having to do with my hands. And so I had to kind of figure out how to get better. And so there was just different ways I learned to prep teeth that worked for me.
Talk to your hands.
For other people. I talk to my hands.
Just
I talk them
to your hands.
Talk them through it.
Just motivate them. But that's awesome, though.
Every night that I'd wake up with talent in my hands, and it never happened. It never happened.
I feel like my left hand hates me. My left hand is so weak. My left hand's so weak.
But the problem is, I'm left-handed. Thank you, God.
That's the problem.
Mine sucks too, but I'm left-handed. That's where it really gets me down. And so, yeah, we started making those
videos
and putting them out there.
So you did them in the lab while people were watching, or were you doing the videos at your office, private practice, on patients?
No, by that point, I had sold the private practice and just went in and practiced inside of Glidewell. And then we started trying to develop our own materials, and most of them failed. In fact, all of them failed until we started playing with Bruxer, which we launched then.
Turned out to be pretty good.
Yeah, that turned out to do some nice things in dentistry.
So what year did you join the Glidewell? I'm sorry to interrupt. What year did you join the Glidewell?
2001.
2001.
Yeah.
And that was when you sold the practice at that moment, or you actually saw, because I'm trying to think of what made you decide to just leave the private practice to do that? It's a big risk, right? Or
it is a big risk. And because there was no, at the time, there's no dentist practicing inside of a dental laboratory. I mean, there still kind of really isn't.
Sure.
It's not like some career path you can take. So I had been doing some videos for Glidewell, and they invited me to the Glidewell Christmas party, which at the time, the company was small enough so that it was at Jim Glidewell's house.
Wow.
And Jim's done very well in dentistry. I didn't realize it at the time. And at the time, he didn't own two jets and two yachts like he does now. I think he just had like one multi-engine plane and maybe a Boston Whaler or something. I didn't realize how well the company was doing. And so we were at the Christmas party, and he said, "Hey, this is working out really well. I love being able to test stuff with you. I love that we can kind of show dentists what these materials look like, and we can put two crowns of this type over here and two over here and put them next to each other." He goes, "What would it take to have you come do this full time?" I was like, "Well," so this is mistake number one, you know, is answering this question
on the spot.
Four or five drinks.
Yeah.
On the spot. This is why dentists are just awful negotiators.
Classic.
And I'm like, well, I'd have to sell my practice, and I guess I'd have to get like, I don't know, like 900,000 to a million for that. And then I'd have to, I don't know, be paid like this amount and this. And And I just was kind of speaking out loud, and I just said these things out loud, and he goes, "Sounds great, let's do it." And I was like, "Damn it, damn it, I should have
went too low."
He said, "Yes, way too easy." It's like when you list your house and there's like 10, you know, full price offers.
Yeah.
But it seemed like you actually enjoyed it, though. It was more of something that you were interested and attracted to.
I did. It was because it was more performance kind of stuff. And even when technicians weren't there, I loved doing the cases and then trying to find the ones that had something interesting. And then having those edited down and then voicing them over and putting them out and then being able to use those in lectures. And for me, it was nice because filming in HD also gives you, you know, the ability to pull stills out of it and do magazine articles.
Nice.
Well, and this was all in kind of the pre social media days, obviously, and the internet.
And that's why it's so hard for people that don't understand, like listening to this while they're on their phone or Facebook or however. It's so much harder. I was talking to Dr. Pico, is telling him the same thing. You guys have created something back when nobody was thinking. It was so much harder, you know, like to put something together. I mean, right now, honestly, it's so hard. I mean, I connect myself to a voiceover, like try to, right? Even this age, 2019, to do an audio over a video and like make some sort of educational content. And it's with all the technology I've got in my room, there's still something is like lacking, right? Like, this one is not on point. The video was not, like the light is off or this is that. And then when you tell me 2001, he was doing this in that level for a whole lot of folks, because let's go back at this, the Glidewell Lab, for people that don't know, and this is, correct me if I'm wrong, I heard they do about 6 to 7% of all the labs in America, as far as how much lab work is being done in the whole America, they do about 6 to 7%.
Hey, more.
I'm not sure if that is, I mean, I got that number from a specific source. It's not from Glidewell, but I don't know if that's true. But if it is, then God, I mean, think about how many crowns a day. And so when you're part of that as a dentist, then there's so much responsibility. And that's why, like when you said you got to be good, like think about it, right? Like, shoot.
Yeah, well, they probably, I'd say Glidewell's market share might be like maybe 5% of everything being done in the country, but it's still far and away like the number one lab in the U.S. And it's so weird that you can be like, there's not a lot of industries where the number one person in that industry, like McDonald's, only has 5% of the market share. It's weird just how fractionalized the lab industry is, where it's split up kind of all over the place. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the lab's going to do, you know, a couple million crowns this year. It's kind of hard to believe when you actually see what's happening, but there are so many dentists. Like every month, for example, right around 45,000 dentists order one thing from Glidewell. It could be a crown, could be a snoring appliance, could be something implant-related or a mic card. 45,000 dentists they work with. And that's almost like a half, depending on whose numbers you believe, of the dentists in the country. So to be able to shoot that stuff back in 2001, we had to build an operatory that wasn't your standard 10 by 10 or 12 by 12 operatory. It's a 20 by 20 operatory.
Oh my God, I would pay for that.
That'd be nice.
A huge jib to be able to put the camera right over the patient. Yeah. The camera that we bought, the camera's still about the same price today. The camera and lens together are right around $70,000. So it's about $30,000 for the camera body and $40,000 for the lens. But it's literally a TV broadcast quality camera that has a doubler on it as well. So you can basically fill the whole screen with like half of 7, 8, 9, and then half of 10. So you get this huge clinical image. And then we never would record sound at the same time. We built a sound booth afterwards where I would go in there with the laptop with the movie on there with the professional mic and sit down in the sound booth and then voice it, you know, through a professional microphone direct onto the tape like that. So you haven't seen a lot of people do that same kind of video because it costs a lot of money to kind of do that video. And it really slows you down. The real expensive thing is that there's a full-time video crew at Glidewell just shooting everything that you do as a dentist so that they're able to. Because the hard part is if you try to pick and choose cases and go, oh, this is going to be a great key.
Yeah.
A lot of times it doesn't turn out to be a great one.
Right.
But more importantly, the opposite is true. Every case you don't film turns out perfect.
Exactly.
And that's the secret to make a case turn out perfect is, by God, don't film it. Because
well, the problem is, I mean, gosh, it's a freaking lot. I mean, it takes a lot.
It's a lot of time. Like a full arch case or something that would take you half the time. You have to
stop and take pictures.
Taking gloves off. But I mean, if they have a crew there, though, I feel like you could even be barefooted.
Are your assistants taking your pictures?
No.
I still like to get them.
I'm still a control freak. I like to do that angle because
like
sometimes I feel like
gloves and all that crap.
It's so much work. But at the same time, though, so you did this in 2000 when you joined.
Forward,
yeah. So 2000 because you said Bruxer, you were a part of that whole Bruxer crowd. So you did a lot of testing and okay. And then what happened? So tell me. So tell us what then
talk about Bruxer.
Well, that was, you know, we started playing around with that in 2007. As soon as we saw the success of Emacs, like Emacs, we had tried two other times before and it failed. You know, the first time Emacs came out, it was called Empress 2. Yep. And it was lithium disilicate, but it had another porcelain fused to the top of it. And like most bilayered materials, there was a tendency for that feldspathic porcelain to come off the lithium disilicate. So they took that off the market. And then it came back again as something called IPS Eris, E-R-I-S.
Oh, I've heard of that.
And that had a different feldspathic porcelain on the lithium disilicate, and that kept coming off, so they took that off the market. And so the third time they came out with it, we were like, no, we just time out. We don't want to use it. Keep it away from us. We have a bunch of dentists pissed from the last two times.
Yeah.
This came out, and they said, well, no, this time we're not putting anything on top of it. The whole crown's made out of lithium disilicate. We're like, what does that look like? They said, it looks pretty good. And so we started doing some Emacs crowns. We're like, damn, they're right. You can make monolithic with no porcelain on it, and it looks pretty good. And that was a big eye-opening moment for us to go, this is the first time in the history of dentistry that you could have something without ceramic material on it that looked good. It was just monolithic lithium disilicate. So we got all excited about this. It became the fastest growing product in the history of Glidewell. And then one day Jim Glidewell walked in, and we were also doing lava crowns from 3M, which was feldspathic porcelain fused to a zirconia substructure. And Jim said, well, what if we made the whole crown out of zirconia with no porcelain on it? We all looked at each other like, I don't know. And he was like, what would it do to somebody's teeth? We're like, I don't know. What, should we try it on somebody? He goes, yeah, we got 3,000 employees. Let's see what happens. As it turns out, they were already experimenting with solid zirconia over in Europe. And so we just started playing with it and making our own as well. And it was really ugly in the beginning. It was kind of ugly even when we launched it. But we had a video that we made that kind of went viral. I mean, if anything could ever go, I don't think anything really ever goes viral in dentistry. But it kind of became very popular where we took a PFM crown, put it on a 2x4 and hit it with a sledgehammer, and it just explodes.
Dude, that is the most popular video of all time. I'm so glad you brought that up, because that would be the neat thing about this whole podcast is that hammer test.
Yeah, and then you put the Bruxer crown and hit it, and it just drives it into the wood. And then we did one later, like a year and a half, 2 years later, with a Bruxer veneer, where you literally take a veneer and you're hammering on the incisal edge of this veneer and pounding into the wood. And that demonstrated one thing to dentists, how strong it was. What it really was demonstrating to them was what a pain in the ass this is going to be to cut off when you have to cut one of these off.
That's what you guys missed out to tell them.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what we were trying to tell them, but they.
But so this is so fascinating, though, because somebody, okay, so a dentist that goes to dental school, gets out, no prior lab experience, gets into like involved with the media, technology, the video, and then you start learning biomaterial. Right? Like, because this is like, you know, a whole lot more if you're in a lab than average dentist Joe that doesn't know what lithium disilicate is. So how much of that do you think right now? Because this is my question, goes back to a lot of younger dentists getting out of school thinking that lab is lab. It's so important to know what you're putting in people's mouth and what material. So can you kind of brighten us in the whole journey of you learning this whole, all these biomaterials, which for me, I used to skip that class because it was the most boring class in the world. But then I graduated, I realized how important that whole, you got to know.
Right. But you didn't have to know anything, really. From the time I graduated, it was like, you know, there was Cas gold, there was PFM. basically it. There's a few other things that were introduced that were kind of fringe products. So there wasn't that much to necessarily know about it. But being inside of the lab, Yeah, that certainly helps you get an education on these kinds of things.
It's a privilege.
It's eye-opening.
I really think that I'd like to see a world where, and this will never happen, but I'd like to see a world where when you graduate from dental school and you take your boards and you're waiting for results, it would be nice if it was mandatory for every dentist had to spend 3 months working in a dental laboratory.
Oh, okay, that would be so good.
Some kind of stipend. But the biggest thing it would do would be not only exposure to materials, the best thing it would do would be force you as a newly graduated dentist to make crowns on preps that had not been reduced enough. Because I think this could be the greatest lesson you would ever learn.
That's
is forcing you to try to make crowns when you barely have any room and then go into practice realizing, oh, I'm tying my technicians' hands together if I don't give them enough room. They certainly can't give me a crown that looks beautiful in any way, shape, or form, and it probably is not going to have the longevity of
just being. I think just being in that whole environment, interacting with the lab technicians to share ideas. So I'm very fortunate because when I graduated, I joined Affordable Dentures and Implants, where they had a lab in the back, but it was of course not a full lab. It was just denture and bread and butter denture. However, what it taught me was just whole vision, like, you know how you said that they don't know what's going on in their mouth, like these people, they have no idea. But then the interaction with me and Rita and lab, and just it allowed me to see so much more that is possible if we could actually learn a little bit, me going beyond and learn the lab and the lab tech learning a little bit beyond and learning what's patients look like. That whole interaction is what's missing in America. And that's why I feel like the lab industry is a struggle and it's become more commodity of what's cheapest, fastest, easiest, because we don't really know what we're doing. Instead of in Europe, for example, just an example, they go to school lab techs for what, 4 years?
Yeah, it's a much bigger
deal. And they're so much more passionate to learn here. I don't know even if it's the same thing with Dennis too. Like, right, how much do you really care versus you want to just get $60 crowns from China?
That's the problem. That's the problem, is the race to the bottom. I mean, the dentists to these don't.
But why is it not like that in Europe? That's my thing. Like, why do they?
We probably because of us.
Like when you just, Mike said it too, like you said zirconia was there available. They were doing it and we brought it here. There are so many materials that are being tested over there so much easier because they're not worrying about lawsuits and things. They're like so easy. So then they bring it here. And now here you're like, as soon as he fails, like you said, if he fails a couple of times, you're like done with it. All right. So the whole gap between the dental industry, dentist and the lab in America is just so much to where when you said that 3 months, I think that should be mandatory.
And if you're serious about doing like the best aesthetic restorative dentistry that you can do, the easiest way to do it by far is to have a laboratory technician in your office, or certainly on the same 100% floor as you, or maybe in the same building. And in the 1940s and the 1950s, that was largely true. My dad had a lab tech in his office, but back then they were doing cast gold inlays and onlays. It was when the PFM was invented in 1959 that it became really difficult to do that, to do all the ceramic work and everything else that needed to be done in an office. And that was kind of the beginning of the commercial laboratory, the rise of the laboratory. So having a lab technician in your office who with CAD/CAM can now, you know, I used to
do it all.
Well, the reason I love CEREC was I could prep a tooth, or I could prep 8 and 9 or 7 through 10. I could do my digital scan with, you know, back in the day, the OmniCam or the Prime Scan today, scan those 4 units. My technician, Cindy, would come take it on a thumb drive. She would mill it, stain it, and glaze it. And two and a half hours later, I had these 4 gorgeous crowns.
Done
by a lab tech, but still being done in that same time. And so if every CEREC unit came with a dental technician duct taped to the mill. I know that's slavery, technical slavery. But if that happened,
paid slavery, indentured servanthood.
Yeah, they'd be selling like hotcakes. And so the hardest way to do dentistry is to prep something in your city and then send it to the other side of the state or the other side of the country and have it done. But that being said, guys like Matt Roberts in Idaho Falls, who are charging $600 for a crown, none of the dentists in Idaho Falls can afford him. So that's all being done via FedEx. But the dentists who are working with him are taking tons and tons of documentation and photographs to help make this happen. But there's no doubt that your experience of being at Affordable Dentures, or whether it's Clear Choice or whoever, having technicians in the building is
by I got so lucky, and that's why it's so hard. Remember how when we first started a podcast, one of my first episodes, I was like, dude, you got to get a lab here.
Oh, I know.
And you brought Matt. I think that was the second episode, because I love labs so much because it's so important what I do, especially in the implant world where you're charging 50 grand, 40 grand, 30 grand.
It makes or breaks what you're doing.
Like, and I've been so burned using so many different labs just because I wanted to try it and cheaper material, this and that. I've done so much to where now I'm like, forget it. Let me just build my own lab in my office. So I'm so happy that that's the direction I'm going. Right now I'm hiring a lab tech. Because it'll be interesting. You know what? The funny thing is that I don't want them to be savvy with their hands. I want them to be savvy with their head, because now they have to just work on a computer.
It's all digital.
The touch screen, it's got a zircons on. So I'm doing the whole shebang of Face Hunter, and hopefully we'll see how many Bruxer and
zircons. I'm pumped. I'm pumped to see how it goes.
I mean, you need it.
I think it has to be.
You need
a
lab.
Where things are going.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing more and more group practices. Large, you know, the solo dentist of the 90s and early 2000s isn't going to be able to be competitive. And so you're going to have more. And when you do that, when you have three or four docs, then all of a sudden it makes sense to have a lab tech 100%. In the office. Doing full arch implant stuff, because I mean, we'll have
the time.
Our lab bill and then removable and that the fixed stuff alone will be over, you know, 150, 200 grand. And so it's like, well, gosh, I can bring in somebody.
Thanks to 3D printing, you could, you know, it's so funny, Mike, you say this, because I was even going to, Soli knows, to have my RDA. That's how much I know it could be done, that you could train somebody as an RDA to be doing your lab, as long as they know digital. I mean, you know how many dental offices do that. But then I was like, now I need somebody who actually went to school and got a CDT, because they're passionate to do this. So that's where I'm at right now with my practice. And I'm like looking so forward, because the only thing that I lacked in my office where I couldn't promise them something was always the lab. Like, it wasn't on me or my staff in the office. It was just the lab. And now I'm so happy, even though I work with amazing labs a lot of labs in the country, but most of them, again, it's just not convenient, you know?
No, it's not.
So you talk about that, you know, the commoditization of it.
Right.
The Glidewell sits right now at this area, this $99 crown, you know, with the Bruxer crowns and with the Emax crowns at $99. And I'm not going to say that a laboratory that is charging $225 for an Emax crown, are they going to spend more time on it than a Emax crown at Glidewell for $99? Yes. You know, there's a really good chance that they're going to. It's just that most dentists don't necessarily want to pay $225 for an Emax crown, even though it might be better or have more time spent on it than the Glidewell crown at $99. But for $99, sometimes dentists want to make a lot of special requests about the crowns they get. And that's the thing about a big lab like Glidewell, is that it's way more like Burger King. I mean, way more like McDonald's than Burger King, I should say.
Sure.
Burger King is have it your way. And at Glidewell, it's more like, no, we're serving Big Macs. If you like the Big Mac, you're
going to get a crown. You're going to get an A1 Emax or A2. Right.
I mean, you cannot go to McDonald's and say medium well or medium rare. Come on.
Yeah, I got so pissed at that when I was young, because I wanted ketchup only. Now I would get freaking mustard and pickles on there. So I became a Burger King guy.
No, I think I'm still a Big Mac.
Couldn't do it for that reason. But
they made a special, but you're right. Because okay, so here's the thing though. But like, this is so important, and I hope people that are listening understand the concept, especially if you're younger in your career or in school for sure. Like, I feel like if they actually witness Mike of the lab technicians making these, and how technique sensitive it is to put the zirconia in here and how to do it and all the temperature, then the mindset will change from the school, from the young. And like Dennis getting out, to not think, hey, yeah, I may pay $50 or $40, but I probably, that person that made it didn't follow all the things I saw that it's supposed to be done, right? Like, because it doesn't just make sense. If you're charging me $40-$50, then there's no way you use this or you had done this, because you're losing money that way. So when I use a lot of those labs, or some of the, not like the labs that are like, they were overseeing things or sending them overseas, it was just so, you could tell this is not done properly. And the problem with that is, because they don't see it, the whole the process and the making and the materials and the labor, it is so easy to commoditize or be like, oh, I just give me the cheapest. Because that's right now, I talk to a lot of young people and that's all they care about. How much are you charging? Like the first thing that comes out of their mouth, I got a new lab. How much is this? I'm like, I don't know, but if the person is like, so my thing is big on technicians. I love to know who's making this for Bobby, who's making this for Miss Who. And so because the way that I present it to my labs, and my labs honestly love me because I give them more data, videos, content, sure, that they know this person, like why they even at this stage, what were their jaw looks like, but their bite, their history, their graduation picture, that she's 80. But when they see it, then you see the lab techs world, like they are so motivated, even on the other side, that Harold's and Adams and people over in the lab, they're like wanting to make something even like, because it's for Paul. It's not okay for this cast that looks yellow or white.
You know, when you look at the, I did a study once where we looked at the anterior Emax prescriptions that came into the lab. So whether it was for a crown or whether it was for a veneer, and we looked at all, and so Glidewell works with dentists in all 50 states and it all comes in via FedEx. I mean, even if a dentist practices across the street from the lab, you know, there's no pickup and delivery. They have to send it in or drop it off, but it's coming in from all 50 states. 2/3 of the dentists are east of the Mississippi. So that's where most of the work coming into Glidewell is actually from, the eastern third of the United States. And when you look at these anterior Emax prescriptions for anterior teeth, so something we would just call it between 6 and 11, only 3% of them had a photograph for the technician.
No, it's true, man. It is so sad.
Oh my God. Well, let's nip that in the bud right now and say, if you're sending in crown in the interior, please send pictures.
It's so bad.
They get pissed off when the shade's not right.
Well, yeah, to ask a technician to try to, I mean, what are the chances? I mean, it says Emax crown tooth number 9, shade A2. What are the chances this tooth is a dead on ringer for an A2, first of all? And second of all, it's like a dentist would never try to build up composite on a whole tooth if you didn't let them see the tooth next to it. It's ridiculous. And I tell dentists all the time, if you want your lab technician to work harder for you without having to pay a penny more, send them a photograph, because then they know you're serious about them trying to get it right. And then send them a photograph when it's in the mouth, whether it looks great, so-so, or poor. Don't just send them the shit.
Give them feedback.
And yell at them. Yeah, let them see their work in a human being's mouth. And what if I? And they say, well, what if I don't put the right shade tab in the mouth? It doesn't even matter. It does. Just put
give them something, a reference.
Give them some reference point. Don't print it up because you're not using the right paper. Because you're too cheap in your printer to use the reference.
It's true, man.
Just email them the image they'll go, okay, that tooth, that doesn't look like that C4 shade tab, but now here I have the crown. I'll put it next to a C4 and make them look not the same even there. And so it's ridiculous that they're being asked to do things like that. But the most embarrassing thing to me is that now, you know, once at Glidewell, when we had adopted the CAD/CAM digital fabrication of crowns, things got really clear for us, because whether it was a digital impression that came in or a polyvinyl impression where we pour it in stone, cut the die out, articulate it, do all that stuff, and then scan it in a 3-shaped desktop scanner, we wanted to get to the digital environment so we could pull a design, you know, from the library and start designing it digitally instead of dipping a die into wax. And when we start doing it digitally, it's very easy for a technician to click on the prep tooth, click on the opposing tooth, and see the minimum amount that was reduced there. And so it's no more guessing. It's no more the laboratory taking and looking through there and goes, oh, that looks like 6 or 7 tenths of a millimeter. You click these two points and you go, oh, that's 0.67 millimeters is the space that we have. And so it used to be a dentist would prep a tooth and the lab would call and say, I don't think we have enough room. And the dentist like, no, I'm pretty sure you have enough room. I was there when I prepped it. I'm pretty sure you have enough room. And you're like, well, how did you measure it? And they're like, oh, I closed one eye and pulled the cheek back and stared back at that second molar and I eyeballed it. I'm like, what are you, the Terminator? You have some kind of micrometer in your retina? Are you high? This is not skill set. No human has the ability to do that. And so we could get away prepping by the seat of our pants and just guessing for decades, because it was just kind of a he said, she said between the lab and the dentist. But now that they're checking up, they're checking our homework, they're seeing exactly to the hundredths of a millimeter how much we reduce. We need to step our game up, because we look like idiots. Right. Dentists are just like, eyeballing how much they're prepping and then sending it to the lab, and the lab can see exactly how much you've reduced. And if you don't believe it, they'll be happy to send you a screenshot showing how under-reduced your prep is. And if Dennis were the pilots of America, there'd be planes falling out of the sky left and right.
Oh, my like God. It's so true, man.
For prepping teeth. No one's checking reduction. I do everything based on depth cuts because I was a chronic – I had to go to underprepping when I was younger, like a 12-step program for underprepping teeth. And when I had technicians in the room, they were constantly yelling at me for underprepping. And that's what really got me to figure out a way to do it. And so now anytime I'm prepping a crown for the first time on a tooth, I do depth cuts. If it's already got an old crown, I'm taking it off. Contact Ease makes these great prepture devices to see how much has been reduced. But it's embarrassing to see the lack of science and how we're doing it by the seat of our pants. And like technicians will ask me, why are all dentists like this? I'm like, well, not all of them, just 80% of them are, checking.
It's true, man. It was the most eye-opening, Soli. And I tell you this because it was like, it moved me where I went to a big lab. It was 300, 400. I'm not going to even say the name, but what you said was just so true, because some of them, I was just thinking of how criminal is this? Like this is just, it hurts you.
It's bad.
It hurts you because you think that this person got paid or did they get paid? I hope not, because what they're doing, and as a lab person, I don't even know how you can be an accomplice.
Well,
you're like, dude, this is not going to last in your mouth, in your patients. And you know, it's so funny. And I'm not saying this in a way that I'm telling, I'm not like this. I tell my lab people that, hey, if there's any problem with anything, please, before fabrication, show me a design, show me something, and I will absolutely 100%. Because if I'm getting something back from the lab, that means whatever I gave you, you're more than welcome to give me whatever, it comes in, it goes out. But if I'm not open enough to tell them, hey, because the thing is, again, I'll go back to the affordable, seeing how much lab knows, and that's my privilege of seeing it. And that's why I don't blame any young dentist getting out or people that are sending these things to the lab, because if they go to the lab and they see their work and some of the things that these lab people have to do, then they don't ask how much. They're just like, how could you help me to do this case of finish? They're just wanting magicians to be in a lab. And that's why when I'm building my lab, oh God, there's no way I want to even work with Dennis, because I'm so scared of what am I going to get with some of these people.
Well, the big thing is, I think what you did, and Dad, maybe you do the same thing, was, giving the lab permission to give you feedback and be like, call them and say, how was the preps? What can I do better to make your job easier? If you'll do that, one, you're going to get better lab work. Cause when you're showing that you're caring about what you're doing, that they're going to care more about what you're doing.
Yep.
And when you're going out of your way to, and then you're sending them pictures and doing that stuff, you just get better work. The people you like, you want to go out of your way to make sure that they love what they like, versus the people who are assholes. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I'm going to get you what you need. And then we're moving on. I mean, that's life. And so I think that's,
I'll go one step even further and say that, instead of saying, call me, you can always call me about my preps and impressions. Let's really try to bring them in as part of the team. Exactly. So what I would do with Cindy, practicing inside of Glidewell is, and this is really just when I was doing anterior teeth more than anything else, but doing a big anterior case, and I'd call Cindy, my technician, and to look at the preps, and I'd say, am I done? And she'd sit down and look at the mirror. And you have to realize that when technicians look at teeth, I'd ask her, I'd say, what are you looking at when you're looking at these preps? She said, I'm picturing the Emax crowns in my mind, and do I have enough room for what I need to do? I said, wow, that's interesting. She said, what are you looking at? I said, I'm picturing where the teeth originally were and if I reduced enough. And she said, well, that's different than if there's enough room
for where they need to be.
Next crown. Right. I mean, essentially, it's almost the same, but it's really kind of looking at it from the total other direction of, did I destroy enough is what I'm looking at, trying to picture the original teeth. But that really doesn't answer the question of, did I reduce enough to put these teeth into an ideal arch form in an aesthetic manner? And that's what she's looking at. So she might say, can you reduce the incisal edge of 7 to 10? Sure. And I do that. She goes, okay, cool. She goes, how about on the distal of 8 and 9? Can you round that distal line? I go, yes, I can. I round it off. Then she has a patient bite together. She goes, okay, you're done. And anytime she told me I was done, the case looked perfect when it came back. But it's tough as a dentist if you haven't made a bunch of sets of anterior crowns to know what that looks like. Depth cuts help and will get you most of the way there. But one of the great things about digital impression units, all you need is some desktop sharing software like GoToMeeting or something like that. And a lot of my friends do this with Cindy where they'll prep 7 through 10 for Emax crowns and then they'll just share their desktop with her and she's out on her own and has her own lab now. And she'll just look and they'll take their camera and show the preps and then she can watch them take the impression. So she can have them change the preps while their patient's still in chair, still anesthetized, impression hasn't been taken yet. And to me, that's way more meaningful, even though it's the right thing to do to say, call me about my preps and impressions. This is while the patient's still there and numb and we can make those changes. That to me is more true.
That's a great idea.
Anytime the technician tells you you're done with prepping, you're going to get a great result because they're looking at it from that standpoint of, do I have what I need to build some beautiful crowns?
And then it's on them because they've given me the okay. So like they're in. All right, sweet. Well, let's fast forward then a little bit, change up topics a little bit. What are you doing now? What are you doing these days?
I'm working with Aegis Communications. They own a couple magazines in dentistry. They own Inside Dentistry, Inside Dental Technology, and Compendium. So we've put together a video series called Product Talk, where I go out to different KOLs who have incorporated a new product or technique into their office and taken some pictures or video of it. And we go out there and they share a case or two with me and then I interview them about it. So it's fun because it's not just like reading about a product in a magazine. It's actually hearing somebody who's been using it now for 5 or 6 months kind of give their experience and share a couple cases. So I love that because I love producing videos and I love interviewing people. So
nice.
Those two things go together really well. And then I've been doing some work with 6 Month Smiles. And I've been doing, right when I got out of school, you know, Payray went and took every implant case known to man. That wasn't, when I got out of school, implants were like subperiosteals and blades.
Oh, yeah, they were scary.
Oh, there was barely specialists doing it, let alone GP.
A lot of nerve damages. Oh, implants are not good.
Everyone's numb.
Yeah.
But you have teeth.
Just awful, awful, brutal looking stuff that... it would be another 15 years before root form implants would come along, at least in America. And so I went out with a friend of mine and we started taking a lot of orthodontic classes. So we were like, you know, this looks like cosmetic dentistry. In fact, it seems a lot easier than, you know, ripping off enamel and putting lithium disilicate veneers on to be able to move teeth around. I think orthodontists were the original aesthetic dentists back in the day, long before veneers existed. So we started doing comprehensive ortho. And so most of it was on kids and adolescents and two-faced stuff with the appliances in the beginning and then all the hardware later. But I never really liked, I'm a little too ADD for 24-month treatment plans, you know, or three-year or four-year plans to see it all get finished. So I started leaning more towards short-term orthodontics, like cosmetic-focused orthodontics. And right about that time is when 6 Month Smiles came out. So it was a great way to be able to just focus on anterior teeth. And by doing some interproximal reduction and taking advantage of, you know, these ability to round out an arch, you just get some fantastic results. So you could use it by itself with bleaching, or I'd use it a lot of times as a setup for then doing no prep veneers, because that's the one time no preps work pretty darn well is when you take ugly teeth and put them in an almost ideal arch form, but they're still ugly and you need to do something. That's the one time I can see no prep veneers working well. And then in 2000, Align came out with aligners and spent $30 million on this huge advertising campaign. And all of a sudden, patients everywhere knew what these aligners were. So I got certified and I started doing aligners, but it was really frustrating. When you're used to moving teeth by bonding a bracket to the facial surface of the tooth, putting an arch wire and elastic on, you could turn it whichever way you want to turn it, intrude it, extrude it, do whatever you want. And with aligners, I felt like instead of just grabbing the tooth and moving it, I was like, oh, we've been to get it to move, it was really frustrating. And it would be years before like there'd be a cosmetic attachments. And now it's kind of gone a step beyond that too. But I still stuck with 6 Month Smiles because I liked the control of being.
Oh, I love it. So it's only for anterior and enlighten me. You do that too, right?
So it was the first CE course I ever took. I was still in dental school. It was like May, the last month of school, and like we were pretty much done, and dad was like, hey, you know what I don't do any of is any ortho. And so I was like, well, that's a great idea. You're not doing any ortho. I can go out and do something immediately. So I walk in day one and have something to offer the patients that they can't say, well, I want the old guy.
Yeah.
And so I went, took the course, and you know, it was amazing because what we realized was, well, two things. One is that it actually worked. And like, we were, you know, following the protocol and moving teeth and picking the right cases, and we were getting good results. But two, what was crazy is Dad had had so many patients who he had recommended go to the orthodontist that hadn't. And then all of a sudden, if they can get the work done in the office with the people they know, they were like, yes, 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 yes. And so it was crazy. So all these people that he had talked to about doing ortho weren't wanting to do it, but then all of a sudden we could do it in the office and they all said yes. So for me, it was huge and a great thing to build, because all of a sudden, if you're starting, let's say you're starting one case a month, that could be an extra $4,000, $40,000.
Like, how do you, okay, so when you say anteriorly, like moving the teeth, mostly anterior teeth, but when you're doing that, you probably have to be pretty careful to know what needs to happen for this case to be like, okay, so how are you going to know if you change the anterior, it's not going to affect the posterior and the whole occlusion to not constrict them or make them like all of that? Like, who is the right case for these people? Like, these are mostly aesthetic cases or what?
Yeah, these are almost all aesthetic cases. These are all adults who pretty much are sitting in the hygiene chair and or sitting in your chair, and they're specifically asking you, for the most part, what can we do about these lower anterior teeth?
So, relapse cases are great cases.
Okay.
And so the mandible always want to grow downward and forward. Sure. So you're always having that kind of lower anterior crowding, much more so than on maxillary teeth. And so with the combination of interproximal reduction, which is necessary sometimes, probably 4 or 5 years ago, 6 months, Smile started doing a digital treatment plan where you could send in the photographs and the models, and they have a team of orthodontists who actually treatment plan these cases for you. Nice. So if you're a G just getting into this, it's basically like guided implant surgery. Yeah. You know, they're using software, but you've also got these orthodontists who are doing it and planning the case for you as well. So we're not correcting posterior crossbites. If they have a posterior crossbite, they're going to still have it at the end. So it's just dealing with the anterior teeth. But the funny thing was, I loved doing it. Even though aligners were coming out, I was like, I still want to be able to move teeth. But as I was looking at people's mouths, most of the time what I would see is that you'd see crowding of 4, 5, 6 millimeters in the lower anteriors. And you go, well, that definitely needs to have brackets and arch wires. And then you look at the upper and you needed a little bit of movement. And you would think, well, that actually could be treated with an aligner.
Yeah.
But there was no company that was doing that mixed appliance therapy until now. And so starting in June next month, 6 Month Smiles is introducing this mixed appliance therapy where you can actually do aligners on the upper where there's tend to be less rotations and less crowding, and you can do brackets and arch wires on the lower and still finish the whole case in 6 months or sometimes 7, 8,
and then
9.
The retainers are going to work on just the front teeth, or it's going to be also the back teeth as well?
No, the retainers are just on any of the teeth that have moved. So it's either going to be a bonded lingual retainer. That's kind of my favorite on lower anterior teeth, because people will say, how long do I have to wear this?
Right.
Yeah. And it's like, only as long as you want your teeth to remain straight. You know, the day you don't want them to be straight anymore, let us know and we'll take that off for you. So I love the idea. I just love this new approach. It's like...
It's disruptive, man. It's disruptive.
Well, it's good. Rarely...
What? It's making it easy on me.
Yeah,
I mean, really. as long as this is my problem. Like, after going finishing course occlusion, I'm like now thinking about, as soon as you start moving these anteriors, you're introducing a lot of things that could be as
well. Off. You're assuming that there's an anterior occlusion discrepancy issue from that standpoint, because a lot of it may be, you know, if you're not necessarily changing a lot of, you're not changing canine guidance necessarily by, you know, moving 24 back into place or moving, you know, 25 back. You're just not having that much changes. Especially, I mean, think about it. What you're able to do in 6 to 7 months, it's
no, I know. I'm just worried about, like, for example, if you are starting to move some of these anteriors and start, they're going to start hitting and hitting.
But if anything, it should be better though,
first.
Right? Because if you've got a, if you've got someone,
I'm just thinking of constricted pathway. Like, some of these, like, they're going to be like shut down now. Of course, they're straight, but then guess what? You need veneers and crowns, and because they're going to be like chipping like tomorrow.
But typically, you're seeing that more in someone who's got crowding.
And typically, I see that more honestly with Invisalign. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these people, man, they're putting him in such a tight bite that I've been starting to do. I don't really do ortho because I don't have the knowledge. Like, you guys have gone to courses. All I know for ortho is that as soon as I see an orthodontist case or something that is relapsed, they're hitting, they're so constricted because they, I think they went to school and they were taught that if the teeth are not hitting, and I'm moving my hands, I wish we had video right now, but they're like, if they're not right behind each other, then you're not going to pass.
Your point is you're seeing a lot of upper, where they're sucking uppers back so
there's
far.
There's so much constriction in their jaw. And they're like, hey doc, before ortho, I could move my teeth. Now I feel like I'm in prison. And then what do? I open them up, and that's where I'm, when you say like six, like I'm worried, I'm not saying I've done it and it works, but it's just like, I'm like, how do you deal with the posterior not hitting first and anterior now coming to more of an active bite? That's my thing. And that's why I want to take a whole another 2 years of ortho probably after this. I don't know. But it is cool though. It's the idea. I love the idea. But I think, Mike, at the beginning, you honestly said it yourself. You said, if as long as it's a selected, like it's a good case to begin with exactly. And do it, that's where you need to be. And I think we want to make sure people that whenever who like know enough to know that you're not going to jeopardize them and put them into a certain situation where now, yes, you did straighten them. But then now next thing you know is a lot of restorative.
Right. And so on that digital treatment planning, and you guys will probably appreciate this, there's a...
I need to show you what this looks like, the treatment.
Yeah, I love to.
It's called a Confidex digital treatment plan. And so when it comes back from the orthodontist, the dentist looks at it, and it actually ranks the case on a scale from like 0 to 35 and in terms of difficulty. And so if it's like a 0 to 10 or 12, this is nice. a good case for a beginner to do. If it's 11 to 25, you should be an intermediate. And if it's 25, 30, 35, this is a much more difficult case and you'd want to have advanced skills and not do it as one of your, say, first 5 or 10 cases. And I think that's great that they're able to help the dentist who's just getting into this. Whether you're learning implants or orthodontics, whatever it is, I think the biggest issue is make sure dentists don't get in over their heads. Make
case
sure
selection.
That they learn how
right,
to do
case
this on the simple cases. And that's what this does is it's going to put up the red flags for you. It'll tell you if you did this, the traditional 6 month smile way with just brackets and arch wires, it would take you this long. Or if you want to use aligners and brackets and arch wire on the lower, it'll take this long. And it spells it out for the clinician and lets them know if they're just getting into this, when they should raise the white flag and send this to the orthodontist.
Yeah, sure.
And this is kind of beyond where I want to be right now, beyond my comfort level. So that to me is the big thing, is that we're going to keep people from getting stuck into those things.
Yeah.
And yeah, to your point, most of the time we're taking an undesirable anterior relationship and making it better.
You can definitely treat
anterior deep bites with this and get rid of those as well by hoping to erect some teeth. But it's just in the short, it's not that you're moving teeth any faster. It's just you're doing more limited movements. Because if you're going to get into uprighting molars and doing everything to reset everything up again, like comprehensive orthodontics, that definitely takes more knowledge and more time and more experience. So it's still... I actually see, I would say, less functional issues after this than I do from a lot of crown and bridge cases.
Yeah.
Over contoured lingual contours. I mean, I've definitely seen more issues related to poorly done crown and bridge cases.
Prepping second molars.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, there's nothing. There's no question about that. Absolutely. Well, do you think, is this going to be something that's going to be guided though later on? For example, they're going to guide you, even put the composite. All you have to do, they get
these. Well, that's kind of what they're doing. I need to show you more of this. What's cool is to the Confidex point is it's coming in with like a month by month step. 2 weeks, every 2 weeks, you're getting IPR between these teeth. Make sure this is right here. And then when we put the brackets on, the brackets are already in.
Yeah. Oh, so they're already in?
So they've already put the brackets in the desired location. So I'm not having to like sit there and go like, okay, a little more right, a little more up, a little more down. Literally, you slide these retainer looking things over and cure it. And then boom, they're on. And so it's nice. And what's I'm pumped about as someone who does a good bit of 6 month smiles is I've been having to do clear correct for my aligners, and they've been, it's been a pain in the ass lately because they're like a month turnaround time. And it, just like anything in life, it pays to stay with the same people. You know, I stay at Marriott's and SPG because I want to earn rewards, right? And so the beauty is the more I can do with 6 months miles, the more, you know, discounts I get, the more, you know, reward, so to speak.
No, but
so
I think what it is also important is that you know your limit. You know what happened with the liners. You know what could happen with the braces and the whole. I mean, this
you got to. It's just like implants, and I think, you know, from that standpoint.
So, Mike, are you doing that right now? As far as your full time, tell me what Mike. So, Mike wakes up. What does Mike do?
Yoga.
a lot of triathlon training, a lot of writing, a lot of video production. I'm just getting back into getting going with patients again, and part of I'm looking forward to doing these blended cases with the aligners, and I want to start making clinical videos again. You know, I stopped a couple of years ago, and I find that there's really kind of a hole there. I miss doing that. I miss looking for those cases and finding the interesting things to talk about, and then
it gives you content. It gives you so much more content.
It gives you a lot of content, and it gives you it just allows you to do things that, like, we have three employees walking around Glidewell who have Empress veneers from 4 to 8 and then Emax veneers from 9 to 13, stuff like that. And then you can look at them and see them and see how they look. Yeah. And it allows you to order 4 or 5 sets of crowns and try them all in. It allows you to do things and demonstrate to dentists things that they would never do, like, in their own practice. And I miss doing that. So I'm looking forward to getting back into that and doing that again.
But I feel like we kind of do some of that stuff.
We do it, but
every now and then I'm like, let's throw an Emax here, let's throw a Sultra here.
No, I do though. You know what I did, honestly, and I was so creative. I put 4 different implant systems for one patient.
It's fun in theory, but it's a pain in the ass when you're storing them.
But no, it was cool because I told them too before. I'm like, hey, you're going to have 4 different babies. You can name them all different things. And then it was so cool because now you can, like you said, you can see them, how they look in the x-ray, and then you have data. But are you also in California? So tell us this, are you employed by Glidewell, or how is your, are you, or like the whole, do you have your own office now, or what is?
No, I don't have my own office right now.
Are you looking for, Nashville, Tennessee?
It's too humid here for him.
We could make so many great videos. Okay, so here's the thing. For anybody that they need to get him on, have you Googled him?
The Tola?
If you Google him, the first video, what's going to happen? If you just put his name, because I did it a while ago, but if you put his name, they're going to show his videos on Google. Like, his Google videos are YouTube, right? Like, they're all on YouTube. So if you Google him, you see amount of work this guy has done.
He's put it in.
And put it in, and the content that he has. And back in the day where we don't even know what that VHS or DVD. He said DVD, which I was shocked. I don't even think it was DVD. I think it was VHS.
I think he was just
But at the same time, it's amazing how much this guy is doing. And now, guess what? He's going back and doing something completely crazy different with ortho. Like, coming from Bruxer and Hammer to something completely different. So that's why we need people like you to stay active and teach a lot of young people out of school and younger to know what's possible, right? What's possible. You've created this whole thing of doing whatever you like or you enjoy, and it's fruitful. So
it's good.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, thanks for joining us, man. We need to we'll have to do this again.
We do.
Because there's a lot of stuff
get him in Nashville.
To talk about.
Come to Nashville.
So I love Nashville.
Dude,
I love
we got to do this whole, I'm building a lab so that way you could come in and see, hey, this is completely messed up. But no, it's thank you so much for
control.
Honestly doing this with us as much as, again, we took you from your college days in dental school.
That's right. I walked down memory lane. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate being on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Everybody work smarter, not harder. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
We will do this again. You have a fantastic night.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, I'll Perry, I'll let you know next time I'm going to be in Nashville.
Yeah, man. Let me know, please. Stay with me. Come hang out at the practice. See what's going on. Thanks, man.
All right.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.